You're listening to Succeed, Just Let Go, the podcast that'll change how you think and change your life. I'm Willie Horton and I'm a psychologist, been helping people change their lives since 1996, broadcasting from the French Alps, and delighted to have you along. Let's take this week's step in the right direction.
It is a constant theme in one-to-one conversations with clients over the last 28 years. It is a constant theme, recurring theme, that keeps arising on our program owners' Zooms on Wednesday evenings. I'm looking after myself. I'm looking after my own presence of mind. I'm developing my awareness, my ability to know what's going on and know what the right thing is to do and know what the right thing is to say. I'm developing my ability through awareness and presence to behave myself and do the right thing. And yet I am surrounded by people who are simply not on the same page. I'm surrounded by clawing people who are trying to drag me back down to their level. Now, before we go any further, a number of people over the years have said to me, isn't what I've just said a little smug? It's a word that has been used a few times in conversations over the years. Isn't it a little judgmental? Or through mindfulness, don't we develop a kind of smugness? Well, if you are smug in your mindfulness, you're actually not mindful because you're judging other people. And one of the key elements of the University of Massachusetts Medical School definition of mindfulness is that through being present and being immersed in what we're doing very deliberately, not only do we lose track of how we judge ourselves, a point I'm going to come back to in a moment, but we become non-judgmental. We simply are, and we are doing what we know we need to do, not based on judgment of what's going on in the moment or judgment of those around us, but on an instinctive feeling of what is best to do at each moment in time. And when we do turn up like that, even though we are surrounded by what I would describe and have frequently described as normal crazy people, we help those normal crazy people raise their game. Now, we don't do it through proselytizing. We don't do it through preaching. I recollect a conversation I had with a client many, 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 many years ago who was so taken by his awakening, that's how he described it, that he went around talking to people about how they should do my, what was at the time, 3-day workshop. And of course, as a result of preaching like that, he put a load of people off. That's not what I'm talking about at all. What I'm talking about is that when we turn up to the here and the now, and we are fully present, our presence impacts those around us. You know, as well as I do, that if somebody with presence, or what we call charisma, walks into a gathering, everybody feels that bit uplifted. When we are in the presence of people who have presence, we feel as if our own energy has been heightened too. And that isn't a feeling, that is a fact, for the simple reason that people with presence give their energy freely to those around them. They don't decide to give their energy to those around them. It just happens as a result of being present. Now, if we look at it from the perspective of quantum physics and how our energy flows freely when we are fully present, in other words, we're now non-judgmental, we're mindful, we're not thinking, we just are. And we are fully aware of ourselves, fully aware of what is going on, fully aware of the other person, fully there for the other person. When we free up our energy as a result of being in that state of mind, our energy literally comes off us and flies out into the universe around us. What the studies of quantum physics and the studies in the field of bioelectricity and bioenergy tell us is that when we are free flowing like that, the electromagnetic pulse of our own energy generates photons that come off us, and in particular come off the palms of our hands, where there is a high concentration of the terminals of the energy meridians in our body. Now, I know energy meridians are often referred to by acupuncturists, and people will take what is often known as not so much complementary medicine, but alternative medicine. People will take that stuff with a grain of salt. But the University of Seoul in South Korea has recently determined that the energy meridians in our body, known for thousands of years by acupuncturists, are actually the primovascular system that sits alongside the cardiovascular system in our bodies. When the electromagnetic pulse of our own energy is pulsing in harmony with the Schumann resonance, in other words, the ambient pulse of electromagnetic energy in our immediate environment and of the planet at large, when we are so tuned in, when we are synchronized, if I can put it like that, we talked about synchronicity before, those two words sound similar for a very good reason. When we are in that energetic state, the free-flowing electromagnetic pulse sends out photons of light. And what has recently been determined through scientific research is that those photons of light carry messages with them. I know it sounds strange, but it is actually the electromagnetic and energetic way in which we already know that, for example, mood is contagious. We already know that were somebody in our group to yawn, we'd all yawn within the space of 2 or 3 minutes. We know that mood is contagious. This is just bioelectric research and quantum physics saying how it actually works at an energetic level. So when we are present, when we are there for other people, when we are fully there, we're never going to judge them. We're never going to be smug. We are simply going to be there for them. And as a result of looking after ourselves, we place ourselves in a position to look after those around us as well. Or if I can put it in ordinary everyday language, I fix my own oxygen mask first before I help others with theirs. It's the same principle. Now, an awful lot of people don't want me to fix their oxygen mask. An awful lot of people are happy in their misery because they're not aware that they are living in misery. And again, that is not a judgmental statement. That's simply a statement of fact. Because if I am using my mind normally, as 96% of people are, I am completely unaware that I am missing the very experience of my life right now. What I am perceiving, which is a million miles from experiencing, what I am perceiving is a shadow of reality filtered through thoughts that I've been carrying around with me since I was young and impressionable. So we're not talking about judging other people when we talk about how we are superior to other people. That's a joke. We're not talking about judging other people or being smug. We're talking about simply being. Being aware, being mindful, being present, being and doing what it takes to move our life effortlessly forward, as a result of which our rising tide rises the boats around us too, if the people in those boats are that way inclined. And that brings me back to where we started in this conversation today. I'm looking after myself. There are people in boats around me willfully drilling holes in the bottom of their boats so that whilst I am raising my game, they're actually sinking in exactly the same way. And this isn't an aside, this is an important observation. I've been doing this for 28 years, more than 28 years at this stage. And for the first 21, 22 of those years, most of my work was done in the corporate environment. And whilst working in that environment paid very well, it didn't give me what I was looking for from the perspective of the mission that I am on. The mission I'm on is to obviously live my own life to the full. If I don't do that, I'm in no position to talk to or explore with other people how they might do that too. But my mission is to help other people live their lives to the full. And there's a limited opportunity to do that in the corporate environment because, for example, when I would sit down with a leadership team, say of 10 people, all but one or two of those people would have been told to be there. People who weren't told were the people who told everybody else. In other words, the leaders of the leadership team. So you had 10 people in a room. Some of them wanted to be there, even though they had been told. They actually wanted to be there. They wanted to learn. They were open-minded, and they were open to taking on new perspectives on how they might improve their focus, their ability to succeed, their ability to lead other people by example, because we're all leading by example, whether we know it or not. But some of the other people in the room didn't want to be there at all. So if I can go back to the analogy that I used a minute ago in relation to my rising tide raising the boats around me, you had a leadership team in a boat, and some people would be trying to move that boat forward. Other people would be sitting in the middle, not really caring one way or another, and there'd be a couple of people at the back of the boat trying to anchor it to where it actually was now. And then you'd have one or two bad apples in that boat, drilling a hole in the bottom of the boat, seeing if they could make it sink for their own weird and wonderful, normal, crazy ends. In other words, you would have a group of people who didn't constitute a team. A team is a group of people that is actually pulling together. This was a group of disparate people, all of whom had their own personal agendas. And that is the way most so-called teams are in the corporate environment. So I stopped doing corporate work after 21 or 22 years. And at that point, I set up the online program so that I could work with people who put their hand in their own pocket because they wanted to change their lives. They really wanted to change their lives. And the kick I get out of that nowadays, the joy I get out of that nowadays means that I'm not working anymore. I am interacting with people who aren't just raising their game. As a result of the way in which we are interacting with each other, we're raising each other's game. So I'm getting a kick out of that. But let's go back to the start of this conversation. I'm raising my game, and there are people around me who are still drilling holes in the bottom of their boats and actively trying to drill a hole in my boat too. Let's talk about how we deal with other people, because it is one of the most recurring themes that I encounter in conversations that I've had for more than a quarter of a century. Now, before we go any further, I need to touch again on how I deal with the other person in my own head. There are two of you. You have really only been acquainted with one of you since you were 12 or 13 years old. That person is called in cognitive psychology the conceptual self, your personality, your ego, the person who needs to be bolstered, who needs to feel self-confident, the person who moans when they're suffering from low self-esteem. This person, the conceptual self, is what it says on the tin, conceptual. It isn't real. It is an amalgamation of the things that you learned about yourself when you were young and impressionable. It's the stuff that you polished and varnished up to the age of 12 or 13 so you had a complete picture of who you actually aren't. I'll repeat that. The conceptual self is a complete picture of who you are not. Then from the perspective of developmental psychology, which nowadays psychology believes lasts up to about 28 or 29 years of age, during those years you tried to fit who you think you aren't into the tribes that you would like to hang out with. It's where teenage angst, and there's a lot of literature in relation to that, it's where that comes from. I'm trying to fit my square peg into someone else's round hole. And everybody else, by the way, is in the same boat as well. They just don't know it. And you don't know it when you are in that phase of your beautiful attentional spotlight, the part of us that we need to focus on the here and now. When you're in the throes of that attentional spotlight closing down around the age of 12 or 13, most people will never reawaken. The fact that you are listening to this means that you are reawakening. It is as simple as that. You don't need to make any grand decision to take a new path in life. You've already stepped onto that path simply by virtue of the fact that you are listening to what I'm saying, or you've chosen to listen to what I'm saying. And by the way, even if you never did anything else with it, now you know something that you didn't know about yourself before. For starters, you know that the person with whom you have been most acquainted all of your adult life up to now is not a person at all. They're not real. They are a bundle of concepts. They are and have been your travelling companion, but they're not your friend. They are the person that snipes at you, drags you down, belittles you, stops you in your tracks, ties you in knots, and stops you changing any aspect of your life fundamentally. It's only when we meditate. I've gone quite far, actually, in this podcast episode without mentioning the meditate word, but there you are, because it always comes back to meditation. Why? Because meditation is the only scientifically validated way that I can come to my senses and turn my beautiful attentional spotlight back on. I had an email from somebody yesterday who is going through a free online program that I have online. Obviously, it's an online program, online at the moment. Now, if you're interested in doing that free online program at the moment, just click the link in your podcast player to sign up for that. It's current as we speak. But the email I got from this individual was that she was finding it very, very difficult to do the little meditations that I had suggested to her in this free program. She said, should I abandon it? Should I give it up as a bad lot? What is the alternative? And I said to her, well, first of all, I quoted John Kabat-Zinn from the University of Massachusetts Medical School to her. If you can breathe, you can meditate. It's as simple as that. If you think you can't meditate, well, aren't you a fool for thinking of that? And really, if you think about what I've just said, meditation is designed, amongst other things, to stop us thinking, because it is our constant thinking that breathes life into the conceptual self that in reality is not there. She asked what the alternative might be. I said, there isn't one. As far as cognitive psychology and neuroscience is concerned, meditation is the only scientifically validated way that we can take charge of our state of mind, turn on our attentional spotlight, restructure our attentional spotlight so that when we're not meditating, it's still available to us, restructure our subcortical brain so that the components of the subcortical brain communicate with each other in a novel fashion that stops us giving breath to the conceptual self by way of stopping us giving our attention to the thoughts that create the conceptual self, because we, having turned on our attentional spotlight, are now paying attention to the reality of the here and now that we are experiencing through our five senses, through seeing, feeling, hearing, smelling, and tasting what's actually going on, and not adding our judgmental thought to try to make sense of a reality that is, in fact, in this moment, real. That is why John Kabat-Zinn, I'll quote him again, says that meditation is simply coming to your senses. And it is through that that we develop our ability to have the charisma that we talked about earlier on. It is through that that we develop presence. And presence is a really simple word. Again, it actually means what it says on the tin. It means I'm present. Now, people with presence are different to most other people because Harvard, the American Management Association, the Neural Lab in UCLA, you name it, there are universities and august academic bodies all over the world who would be at one in agreeing that about 95-96% of people on this planet are absent. They're not present because they are perceiving, and as I said, there's a world of difference between perceiving and experiencing. They're perceiving what they think of as their lives through their conceptual self. So before we can deal with others at all, we need to deal with the other that is in our own heads. And that is purely and simply done through meditation. There's no merit in my trying to complicate what is a really, really simple message. Once I begin to develop my presence, once I begin to develop my awareness, and one of the key things that everybody has said to me over the 28 years that I've been doing this or more at this stage, once I get to even the initial stages of waking up, awakening, as I said a few minutes ago, I begin to realize the utter madness around me. And it isn't that I become judgmental. It isn't that I become smug, as I said a few minutes ago. It is that I simply am aware, and I'm aware of the madness around me. So let's take a simple everyday example of somebody on this journey. They wake up in the morning. Before they leave the house for work, they will have brushed their teeth. They will have brushed their hair. They will have dressed themselves. They will have showered, obviously not in that order, but they will also have meditated. And it doesn't matter where in that order they meditate, as long as they have meditated before their day gets going. So they'll be cool, calm, and collected as they hop into their car or run for the train. And they'll be driving to work, and somebody will cut out in front of them in traffic, and they'll lose their head. Or their train will be late and they'll start getting annoyed with the fact that they're going to be late for their first meeting. Or they actually get to work. Say they actually do get to work, still cool, calm and collected. There are normal, crazy people all around them. And all each of those normal, crazy people wants is for the person who started out the day cool, calm and collected to play with them in their drama. They're not trying to drag the other person down. They are just looking for their energy because when they perceive reality through their conceptual self, they think that they are lacking in energy themselves. So they go looking for energy from other people. This is the interplay that goes on in every relationship in life, other than the real relationships that take place between people who are awakened. Now, I'm going to digress just for a moment because that's a very important point. Obviously, I've dealt with probably thousands of people at this stage over the last 28 years, but the people who make the most progress most speedily are those whose traveling companion, real traveling companion, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, are actually more or less on the same page as them. In other words, they're not trying to steal their energy. They're not trying to drag them down. At the very least, they are encouraging them, but better again if they are actually on the same page and they're both taking the same journey in developing their own presence and awareness together because they play off each other. It's the same, for example, when I sit down with my group of advanced meditators half a dozen times a month. There might be anything between a dozen and two dozen of us online, say at 7:30 on a Wednesday or Thursday morning. And because we're meditating together, there's greater power in that. And you might say to yourself, well, hold on, that's just a feeling that you get. No, if you go back to the sciences of bioelectricity and quantum physics that I mentioned earlier on, there is a heightened flow of energetic current when we do it with other people. It's as simple as that. People who are not in that zone, normal crazy people, have what they think is a black hole in their own energy. So it isn't that they try to impose something on you. They're looking for something from you. Let's take one of the most frequent examples that I have talked with when working with people in the corporate world individually over the last couple of years, people who are being bullied. Unfortunately, it is extremely prevalent, but it should come as no surprise because bullies are inadequate people in their own minds. That's why they go looking for other people's energy. Bullies are lacking what they think is self-confidence. They think they are low in self-esteem. Bullies are the most insecure of people. They feel, because of whatever happened to them during their formative years, that they are unworthy and undeserving. And that does not sit with how they want to excel in their lives without realizing that they're not in their lives at all. They will walk through other people to climb the greasy pole, particularly in the corporate environment, because they feel so inadequate themselves. They do this by literally walking through other people's energy, as they do, hoovering it up like a vacuum cleaner. So if you're being bullied, the bully is actually sucking your energy out of you. It's an energetic transaction, and it's an energetic transaction whereby you are unwillingly the victim of somebody who actually doesn't know what they're doing because they're so buried up their backside, seeing their life through their conceptual self. It doesn't exonerate them from their reprehensible behavior, by the way. I'm just making the point that they don't know what they're doing because they're not all there. So let's deal with this practical example for just a moment. How do I stop myself being bullied? You notice the question I've asked? It isn't how do I stop the bully? It is how do I stop myself being bullied? I cut off my outward flow of energy to them. How do I do that? By developing my presence of mind so that I am totally in control of my own energy flow, and I only allow it flow into the present moment and not into somebody else's black hole. What do I mean by that in practice? Because people often say to me, what'll I say to the bully? And my stock reply, because it's actually true, is ignore the bully and they'll go away. Because when I ignore the bully, I have suddenly cut off the supply of what they're looking for, my energy. And they say to me, but how will I ignore the bully? What will I say? What will I do? And again, my answer is similar to a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago in relation to what will I say in this difficult conversation? How will I deal with that difficult person? If you turn up to the here and now, you'll know what to say and do in the moment when the opportunity arises. It's as simple as that. And that's why people often say to me that they surprise themselves, amaze themselves, or super surprise themselves in what they say and do in the moment because they are saying and doing things that they thought they couldn't do or say. Thought being the operative word there. Once I'm free of thought, once I'm in the present moment, I will disarm the bully effortlessly. And the bully may actually learn as a result of his or her boat being raised by my rising tide of presence, or they'll go off and bully somebody else. But at least for starters, I've looked after myself. And you must remember that you need, above all else, to look after yourself first. Back to the oxygen mask analogy that we used earlier on. But more fundamentally, you need to look after yourself because you're the most important person in your life. Once you get into that zone, you will be able to deal with anybody who is looking for your energy. Now, I need to clarify that. What I mean by that is for people who are trying to suck your energy from you to make them feel better about themselves. Not necessarily a bully, just most, your average, normal, crazy person who has a warped, opinion of themselves as a result of their thinking that they are their conceptual self. You know, their low self-esteem, they're feeling inadequate, so they need to grab someone else's energy. What my wife calls energy vampires. So once you are present, you can cut off the flow of energy to people who are trying to suck energy from you. But there's the other side of it as well. Because once I am in control of my own energy, I can give of it freely. And the dynamic there is completely and utterly different from when it is being stolen from you. When I'm giving my energy freely, I'm actually enhancing the flow of my own energy, because ultimately my energy is universal energy. It's not just me on my own. When I am flowing like that, when I am giving out my energy freely, not only am I flowing through life, but I'm making my experience of interacting with those around me more and more effortless too. And this is what effortless living is all about. This is what living life to the full is all about. Me flowing in the moment, knowing what to do and when to do it, knowing what to say and when to say it, knowing when to avoid putting my foot on a landmine, the landmines that are strewn in my path by normal crazy people on a day-to-day basis. Knowing what to do when I am faced by a real challenge, not just the challenges thrown at me by normal crazy people, but say, for example, a health challenge, a serious health challenge. Knowing how to behave myself in those circumstances, and in particular, knowing how to be in control of my own state of mind so that my healthier mind brings health to my ailing body. Because there are loads of people, particularly around my age, you know, I'm talking to people who are retiring, semi-retired, thinking about retirement. I mean, I'm almost 66. A lot of my clients are around the same age. And, you know, at this stage, wheels start falling off, bits start falling off people. You'll make yourself far better if you're looking after your own state of mind, healthy body. So I'm talking about looking after your own state of mind so that first and foremost, you can look after yourself. That makes everything so much easier. It also enables you focus properly in the present moment so that you know what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say, how to deal with those people around you who would otherwise suck you dry. How to raise other people's game, not by deliberately going out and saying, oh, this person needs their game raised, or that person, you know, is not in the same boat as me. Am I smug? Am I great? Not that way at all. Simply by turning up. This is all so effortless. As I said earlier on in this particular podcast, there's no merit in my complicating the simple. Number one simple message from this episode: you need to meditate, because that will look after your presence. Number two, you don't need to worry or concern yourself about anything else, because once you are present, once your energy is flowing, you'll always be the right person in the right place at the right time, even when life throws you curved balls. So there you are. Once again, the message is simple. Once again, I'm telling you from experience and the experience of the people with whom I work that following that simple advice isn't just life-changing, it's transformative. It will actually provide you with the kind of experience moment to moment of everyday life that your normal way of thinking could never even begin to imagine. And that traveling companion that I mentioned earlier on, that conceptual self, I was going to say of yours, it isn't even of yours, it's just a bundle of thoughts that were foisted upon you when you were young and impressionable as a result of what other people did to you during those formative years. That conceptual self just vanishes like mist in the morning sun. Your life is in your hands. Your life is what you make of it. You have to turn up to your life to make something of it. And the route to doing that is by seeing, feeling, hearing, smelling, and tasting where you actually are. And the training for that is regular morning meditation. You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. To get involved, join me in my Facebook group, strangely enough called To Succeed, Just Let Go. And for more information, visit www.willie-paul.com.